crackling, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look ahead to the Waste Management Phoenix Open, breaking things down from a DFS perspective, letting you know which golfers we are targeting this weekend. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, pretty good week for us last week, I think, overall. Now we head out to Scottsdale for a really solid field. How are you doing today?
Yeah, you were all over Adam Scott week. I was not for once in on Adam Scott. He certainly came through. You had, who'd you pick to win last week?
Rory and Adam Rory. Scott.
Yeah, I knew you had Scott. And then
I usually forget.
Yeah, I wrote them down this week and I forgot because what is short-term memory?
Of course. So that went well. And now, Brandon, we go to a golf course that's kind of like the millennial version of golf, I guess. Where, like, I don't know if that's the right description, but like, I think it's a cool format. Therefore, it is applicable to all millennials. If they like have this like raucous atmosphere, especially on 16 at a TPC Scottsdale. I think it's like one of the more entertaining weeks to follow golf, just because the atmosphere is so radically. I don't know if it's sustainable for like an entire year. Like, there's a reason it's just one event per year, but like, it's kind of fun for that one week.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up on all the majors and the Masters, and I mean, I feel like I can't even talk in my apartment while I'm streaming the Masters because it's just so, you know, I don't even know. I don't want to say it wrong.
Start pumping your fist.
Yeah, I'm like golf clapping at home while watching some of these events. But yeah, the Waste Management, and it's got a great sponsor for this week.
A garbage tournament, which is just fantastic. You got to embrace the trash sometimes, Brandon. And I think that that's kind of what they're doing here. So we'll break down the Waste Management Phoenix Open in just one second. But first, a quick reminder, with the Super Bowl coming up this week, we do have a single game DFS breakdown for those of you looking to play some DFS for the Super Bowl during your parties. You can go to the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed that is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app to check that out. We gave our thoughts on the MVP slot, on which players we are targeting, each pricing tier, salaries, and also roster construction as well. So make sure you check that out on the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed as you prepare for Sunday. This is Waste Management Phoenix Open this weekend. That is at TPC Scottsdale. It is 7,261 yards and a par 71. There are roughly 127 golfers in this field, and the top 70-plus ties advance after the first two rounds. The past couple of weeks, we've had about 155 golfers per field. This one is a little bit smaller, which means a larger percentage of the golfers will make the cut. I'm sure that will influence some things as we discuss them throughout the day today. Brandon, as we head to TPC Scottsdale, which stats do you think are important to focus on?
Yeah, I think right now the field sits at 129. We've had some replacements, some withdrawals already. But in terms of the stats, it was always going to be strokes gained approach at the top. It just, I mean, I don't really envision too many scenarios moving forward where it's not going to be strokes gained approach. And that's even though, according to Data Golf, strokes gained approach actually drives a lower rate of the scores than usual. It's about 29.3. percent here at TPC Scottsdale compared to almost 35% as a tour average, but it's still the most vital of the three tee to green stats. It's pretty much always going to be. We do see a boost in strokes gained off the tee here. It drives about 19.1% of the scoring at this course compared to about 15% as the tour average. So ball striking again is the key for me this week, and that culminates in greens and regulation, which also makes my key stats list. Those greens, you know, by the way, are Bermuda this week. They register slightly faster than average on the stimp meter, according to futureoffantasy.com. But this par 71 has proved reliant on scoring. I know that I've seen par 5 scoring, and that's true, but a lot of this is made up of par 4 scoring. So strokes gained on par 4s is something to keep in mind this week. The past five winners have all ranked top 11 in strokes gained on par fours. During that week, Gary Woodland last year was fourth. Hideki in his two wins was 11th and first. Brooks Koepka was first. Kevin Stadler was sixth. They also, all five, were top 13 in birdies gained and bogeys avoided. So yes, you need to score, but you also have to avoid the bogeys, which, I mean, sounds super obvious, but that's not really always the case for, you know, each and every course. So my key stats list this week culminates in strokes gained approach, greens in regulation, strokes gained off the tee, par four efficiency, and birdie or better rate.
And I had a similar, I guess, revelation, not a revelation, but like a similar thing popped up in my process when looking back at past results where you couldn't really focus on just driving distance or driving accuracy, because last year it did skew towards distance. But back in 2017, it was more towards accuracy and good drive rate. Same thing back in 2016 as well. So I did wind up going with strokes gained off the tee as opposed to strictly distance or strictly accuracy or good drive rate. So similar vein there, of course, approach. And you mentioned avoiding bogeys. So scrambling is something that is on my list for this week. It is weighted far less heavily than strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach, but it is at least on my list for this week because in the process I use, it did pop up the past 3 years. So it is at least there. But I think overall pretty straightforward this week. There are 22, I believe, in the top 30 in the world golf rankings here. So you just want good golfers because there are a lot of them here for this weekend, which should make for a pretty fun event. Before we take a look at who has done well at TPC Scottsdale in the past, as mentioned, a big game coming up this Sunday. And if you want to get in on the DFS action, you can get a shot at $1 million on FanDuel for a single game entry. It is the Big Game Bowl with $2.53 million in total prizes. $1 million of that will go to first place. It is just $9.99 to enter, and you can roll out up to 150 entries. To get yourself a chance at the top prize, just go to FanDuel.com, check out the NFL lobby, and get in on that. They will also have bingo, once again, for the big game. So if you want to get that, go to FanDuel.com. Bingo is free to enter. Let's take a look at golfers who have done well here in the past. Starting off, Brandon, with the odds-on favorite for this weekend, once again, that is Jon Rahm. And he is, I think, a guy we could obviously discuss in the current form section because of that, but he's also done pretty well here at TPC Scottsdale the past 2 years.
Yeah, it's the combination of the current form and the past history here that really makes me want to talk about Jon Rahm to lead the show, because he is the most expensive golfer on FanDuel this week at $12,500. So you really have to determine whether you're paying that price tag more often than not. Rahm, over his past five events, has finished fourth. He won the Hero World Challenge, was eighth, sixth, and fifth. He is elite. Obviously it's easy to call him one of the best golfers in the world, but he is so consistent that it's pretty crazy. Rahm has played this event three out of the past 4 years. In those, he's finished 5th, 16th, and 11th, which is nothing to scoff at, even at his price tag of $12,500. Now, last year, he actually lost 4 strokes with his approach shots and gained 7 on the greens, which is pretty abnormal for Rahm, but he consistently gained strokes off the tee in these three, which is his forte. He's definitely trending toward being a popular pick yet again, especially based on his win odds. He's the odds-on favorite to win, which is not really surprising. But he is actually just – he's missed a cut in 6 of his past 53 events with 27 top tens.
That is more than half.
Jim, what do we do with Rahm this week?
Yeah, so I think for me, it's going to come down to how popular do you expect him to be? Because I think that regardless, I need to get exposure to Jon Rahm, which is something that I did wind up doing last week and probably should have had more of him, honestly, but I had enough or it was still okay. But I think it's kind of the same approach this week where you get some because he has the potential to just, rack up the birdies and score really well, even if he does not win. So I think that I will have some Rahm, but I think based on, you mentioned he's probably going to be super chalky. I would agree with that. He's just so hot right now. It's hard to avoid him. Hideki Matsuyama, who we'll talk about in a second, probably also going to carry ownership. So I think that actually funnels me towards wanting the most of Justin Thomas, because we know he's really good. We don't have super long rust concerns because he's been at two events since the turn of the calendar, and we know how good he can be. So I think of those three, I wind up favoring Thomas the most. I don't know if he'll have the lowest ownership of those three, but I think he's my favorite straight up, and I think he's not going to be the most popular. So I think that with Rahm, I'm probably going to have some exposure, but wind up being underweight. What about for you?
Yeah, I think some, but I do prefer Justin Thomas. I'm with you. Out of the top three in terms of salary, I'm going Stars and Scrubs this week. I've already made up my mind there. I'm going to try to get very, very top heavy. I just don't know particularly if I can go with Rahm and Thomas in the same lineup, although I would love to do that.
Yeah, I think that you can. It just means you're going to have to be a little bit creative elsewhere, because if you plug in both Rahm and Thomas on FanDuel, you're left with 8,850, and that's manageable is the word that I would use. Not desirable, for sure, but it's manageable. I have not decided if I'm going Stars and Scrubs, because I think in my mind, it's not super Stars and Scrubs you to go like Justin Thomas and then someone from that second tier. But the $400 savings between Rahm and Justin Thomas doesn't hurt, I guess, for me this week. Let's talk here about Hideki Matsuyama, who is third on that list. He is $11,800 behind Rahm and behind Justin Thomas. And last year at this event, he was looking for a three-peat. He had to withdraw, though, due to a wrist injury. But Hideki, healthy again, looking to get back to winning this year. Prior to the withdrawal last year, Hideki had actually been to this event four times. His finishes in those four events were fourth, second, first, and first. It's kind of good. Even last year when he withdrew, he shot a 2-under 69 on Thursday before withdrawing. So even that round was solid. He's coming off of a third at the Farmers Insurance Open. He has made 14 consecutive cuts. So current form, not a concern, which is something we have to talk about with guys who are these course horses who really do excel here. But for Hideki, that's not a major concern. But the current form for Hideki, potentially not quite as good as John Rahm. So Brandon, with Hideki being $11,800, where do you sit at him entering this weekend?
I mean, he's the guy at this course. We basically know that this is like the Hideki spot, but everybody knows that. And
according to Kevin Harvick at Phoenix of golf DFS, I'm sure all of you understand that reference.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, I mean, he's out to a pretty early and pretty heavy lead on Fanshare in terms of tags. I don't expect that to, you know, sort of falter. All the sentiment is positive. He looks good. You combine that with the actual finishes here. You know, he can really finish it off with a win, but also just sort of finish top five. It's not like, I mean, even Rahm was 16th and 11th in two of his three finishes here. His approach game is on point entering this week, sitting second in the field in strokes gained approach over his past 50 rounds. So as much as I want to plug in Hideki with confidence, I think just based on game theory, I have to be underweight.
Yeah, I think I will too. Are you still going to get some Hideki similar to Rahm or go full fade?
I would like to say I'll go full fade. I don't know if I have the guts. I mean, I'm recommending him in my write-up on NumberFire because I think that he is a very smart play from a safety standpoint. But whenever you're looking at you know, these tournaments, I think there's merit to a full fade if his ownership does get out to where it's sort of trending. I think he's a great cash game play, but for tournaments, I'm not saying I'll full fade, but right, I might be pretty close.
So we're talking about Rahm having ownership because of his current form, Hideki because of his course history. Does that mean that Justin Thomas actually will, you know, be a little bit lower than where he should be?
It could mean that. Right now, I mean, it's super early, so the I'm sure this will trend one way or the other, but on fanshare.sports.com, Rahm and Thomas have the same number of tags.
Okay.
So it's kind of early to tell if, you know, Justin Thomas, for whatever reason, gets out to be, you know, more popular than Rahm. I'll just try to find that extra 400
sure.
to get up to Rahm. But right now I'm prioritizing Thomas because of ownership leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I just have to wait and see there.
Okay. I think that makes sense. I think I'd be doing the same thing. Like if for some reason Thomas were to be more popular than Rahm, then I would go harder at Rahm. I just don't think that'll happen based on the way Rahm has been golfing recently. Let's move now to some golfers with a little bit lower salary, starting off with Brendan Steele. He is $10,100. And Brandon, he's been here a good number of times, and the finishes for Steele always pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're more into this mid-range than I am. I'm not saying that you're in on Steele, but I wanted to sort of target someone in this, you know, around $10,000 range with good course form, because I don't want to go stars and scrubs, but it's just kind of hard for me to find too many golfers I'm confident in around this price. But, you know, Steele has certainly been steady in Phoenix. He's got five straight top 26 finishes, including a 17th, 16th, and third the past 3 years. Now, the recent form hasn't necessarily been there, which is generally the case whenever you're chasing course history, but that's kind of that's a discussion for a different time. But he was 57th at the Desert Classic, missed the cut at the Farmers last week. Now last year, before he finished third at this track, he was 20th at the Career Builder and 29th at the Farmers. The year prior, he was 6th and 20th entering this week. So generally had been golfing well entering this event. Not really the case this year. So, I mean, that's a problem for me. Steele does rank 10th among the field in strokes gained off the tee over his past 50 rounds, according to FantasyNational.com. But, I mean, he's kind of lacking everywhere else. He's okay in greens and regulation gained, sitting 47th. I don't think his past history is going to tempt me here.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the off the tee play, I don't think he does enough. But did he pop for you this week, Jim?
No, because we kind of think along a similar vein when it comes to course history versus current form. So he's not really one of the guys who, when I think I skew more towards balance than you may, he's not on that list. For me, it's basically Billy Horschel is like the reason that I kind of want to do this, because he's $9,800 in the same range as Steele. And I really, really like Billy Horschel this week. And I can't really afford him if I go stars and scrubs. So I think that he's kind of the guy in there. Keegan Bradley is slightly of a similar vein. I like Alex Noren on a potential bounce back this week after he was a guy who got some buzz last week. Emiliano Grillo's in that same range. So I think that there are enough golfers in that mid-tier who I think people just aren't going to use this week. And I happen to like a pretty decent amount. So I think it's more so that than, you know, Steele. I think it's the other guys that I mentioned who really stick out to me and tempt me to go with a more balanced approach, even though I know I can go a bit more stars and scrubsy because the field's a little bit smaller this week.
Yeah, I like Horschel. Keegan was sort of almost on my list, but I kind of kicked him off because he's Keegan. Chez Reavie's here. This is his sort of home course. You wouldn't necessarily know it by looking at his course history, but he did finish second here after three missed cuts. He was second here last year. So Steele's out for me, despite the you know, 5 years of you know, top 26 finishes. So, I mean, I think overall there are maybe three golfers in this range that I would feel even somewhat comfortable with. And sure, for me, it's really Horschel who stands out, and I don't think I'll be alone in that.
Alrighty, so let's talk about someone who fits with both a balanced build and more stars and scrubs. He kind of on the high end of the stars and scrubs. That's Byung-Hun Ahn, the friend of the podcast. We've got only 2 years of Ben Ahn in Scottsdale, but both those years showed a lot of potential for a really solid finish, because his finishes of 6th and 23rd are very good on their faces. But the best part is that both those finishes came despite one really bad round each year. Shot a 73 on Sunday in 2017. He shot a 72 on Saturday in 2018. And outside of that, the dude's been golden. He shot a 68 or better in all six of his rounds, so we know that On can go low here. He can get those birdies, which is what we want from a scoring perspective. So On, back on the tour this week, Brandon, he is $9,200. Again, fits with both of our preferred builds. Are you buying into Ben On this week at TPC Scottsdale?
Yeah. He grades out well in the ball striking stats, and that matters a lot to me. He's 18th in approach over his past 50. He's 27th off the tee. And last week, he played the Omega Dubai Desert Classic, where he finished 12th, and that was the one where, I mean, Bryson just ran away with it. Mm-hmm. But like Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia.
It's a good field.
Tommy Fleetwood, Matty Fitzpatrick, they were all inside the top 20 to give you some context. So it was a good field. He's coming off a 12th. So I like him quite a bit at 9,200.
Are you worried at all about travel with On? Because it's a pretty decent distance to go, and that was just this past weekend.
A little bit.
Sure.
But he also is getting a lot of buzz this week because he's cheap. So maybe that combination gets me just to be underweight on him from what I initially expected I would be, because I don't really care to play chalky golfers, and if he's shaping up to be chalky,
yeah,
I'll just look elsewhere.
And if you do decide that you don't want to be on, Abraham Answer did miss the cut last week. He is the exact same price as Ben On, and he also has really good stats, so you could just pivot to Answer. So maybe it's a situation where you have On and then you just take him out and plug in Answer instead. So I think that's an option if you do decide that you get worried about the ownership with Byung Hun On. Let's talk about current form now, Brandon. Again, we always weight current form more heavily than course history, and one guy who is going to grade out pretty well when you're looking at current form is Gary Woodland, coming off another top 10 this past weekend. He is $11,300, and Brandon, of course, he is one of my favorite golfers for this week. So what do you see with Woodland?
Yeah, I probably should have flipped Woodland and Rahm in terms of current form and past history, because, I mean, Woodland won here last year, but it's whatever. They both have the course history and the current form. So Woodland at 11,300, one of my favorite picks this week. I feel like I've been on Gary Woodland for like the past year. He's gained strokes with his ball striking in 80% of his rounds over the past month, if we're looking at super recent samples. He ranks fifth in that split in strokes gained tee to green among the field, among guys with at least five rounds, so more than one event. In terms of finishes, he's been eighth at the Hero World Challenge, second at the Tournament of Champions, missed a secondary cut at the Sony Open, but bounced back, finishing ninth last week at the Farmers. With Woodland, he is someone who can do it all with the ball striking. He is sixth among this field in both strokes gained off the tee and approach. Over the past 50 rounds, he's eighth in greens and regulation gained. I like pretty much everything I see with Gary Woodland outside of the putter, but we saw him overcome that here last year. So again, Woodland stands out to me. Where exactly does he land for you among the high-priced guys this week, Jim?
So are we including him in the Hideki, JT, and Rahm tier as far as high price goes? Or because I'm kind of viewing him as being a second-tier guy.
All right, then second tier. So like Gary Woodland is 11,300, Xander 11,200, Phil's 11,100, Ricky 11,000, Tony Finau 10,900.
Yeah, Phil does have good course history, but I'm not gonna rank him highest here. I think it is Woodland and Finau, the guys who tempt me the most. I just have to decide between those two. I might go Woodland. He is $400 more expensive than Finau, but I think they're both guys who I will be very okay with having as my number two golfer this week after I do plug in Justin Thomas. And if you do that, like if you plug in JT with Woodland, your average per golfer is still 9,150 on FanDuel. That's a pretty respectable number, given the fact that I like guys in the high 8,000s and low 9,000s, and I think that can still allow me to get up to someone like a Billy Horschel for that same lineup. So I think I'm going to have a lot of lineups where I start off with JT or Rahm or Hideki, and then jump down to Woodland in my number two spot. So Woodland's either one or two. There, it's between him and Finau, but I think they're both really fun for me. What about for you?
Yeah, I have Woodland as my, I guess, 1A, if not just number one out of these five. Mm-hmm. I like Finau as my second, so I'm with you there. Obviously, I'm a sucker for Xander, but I think this is a good Ricky week. Unfortunately, I mean, he's got good form here. 11th, 4th, 2nd over his past three. He is shaping up to be popular. I mean, he's always sort of more popular than he should be for the most part. But, you know, he's looking to be kind of more popular than I would have liked to see. I want to get some of that untucked shirt action from Ricky. But I don't know if I can really get there if he's going to be more popular. And I actually prefer, you know, Woodland and Finau straight up.
I do as well. So I hope Ricky's popular. I mean, like, he is very good here. Like, he was second in 2016, fourth in 2017, 11th in 2018. He did make the cut last week at Torrey Pines, which is a deviation from the norm for him. But I still think that I'd prefer Finau and Woodland both straight up, and I'd rank them both above Xander as well. Let's talk about Taylor Gooch, Brandon, because I think the way you view Taylor Gooch really depends on how you define current when it comes to current form. Because if we look at the super recent category, Gooch is just scorching hot, which is a disgusting phrase. But he was fourth at the Desert Classic. He was third at the Farmers Insurance Open. So back-to-back top fives for Gooch. Before that, missed the cut at the Sony Open in Hawaii. Also missed the cut in his final event of 2018 at the RSM Classic. So, you know, there's some risk here. His play off the tee is below average. He's not a great scrambler, but the approach game for Gooch is pretty solid. So, Brandon, how are you feeling about Taylor Gooch this weekend? The salary is still low at $8,700. Is that enough to alleviate any concerns you may have over Gooch?
I mean, so he looked great last week. It was a pretty popular tournament. I mean, I think people are going to look at him and say that he is a clear value this week, and I can understand the case. He's 15th in strokes gained approach among the field over the past 50 rounds, but he's 116th off the tee. That's a little bit worrisome, and I need birdies here. He's 41st in that regard, but I'm also factoring in bogey avoidance. He's 65th there, so he's not by any means bad. The recent samples obviously are going to look better with his recent finishes, so I have no real issues with Gooch. I wouldn't talk you out of him, but I would expect that, you know, he kind of finds his way toward the top of the ownership board. And I mean, sure, he looks good, but is he going to have three great events in a row?
Yeah, I think that for me, the concerns around the stats are enough where if he will be popular, I'm okay jumping off. And if it burns me, it burns me. Like, that's totally fine. I can live with that. Just because I think that, like, golf is a high variance sport, as we know, and using someone who doesn't have a great statistical profile and betting on them doing it again is not exactly a winning type of strategy, I guess. So I think that that's enough for me to stay away from Gooch. I think he's very intriguing, and I'm going to keep an eye on him this week for sure, because, like, if he keeps going, then at some point we have to change our minds. But I don't think I'm there yet, especially given the assumption, I'd assume the same thing as Brandon, that he'll probably be pretty popular this week. So probably not a huge Gooch guy for this week. We'll see how that goes as we head forward beyond that. Let's move now, Brandon, to a golfer I do like, and that is Jason Kokrak. And I was in on him last week. I'm back in on him again this week at $8,600. What do you see with Kokrak recently?
Yeah, he was your boy last week. Yeah. Finished 20th at the Farmers after an 18th at the Desert Classic. That will get you some extra bonus points. FanDuel, by the way, did change their finishing bonuses, so you get some bonus points all the way down to 40th, so it's not just about top 25s. So that is something just to keep in the back of your mind when you're building lineups. Obviously, you kind of want to build lineups where you're peppering the top 25 anyway, but top 40 definitely helps. You know, despite those two recent top 20s, he's priced at just 8,600. You know, he's 160-1 to win, but don't really need a win from someone who is priced at 8,600. And he has good stats over a larger sample as well. Over his past 50 rounds, he ranks 22nd in strokes gained off the tee among this field. He's 19th in strokes gained approach. He's third on strokes gained on par fours and greens in regulation gained, so top three in both of those. Just a great overall ball striking profile. Now, problematically, he's missed two of his past three cuts at this course, but he was 31st last year. He has a 15th and a 40th to his name over the past 5 years. So Not a whole lot of red flags here from Kokrak at 8,600. Are you going back to him this week?
Yes, very much so, because I think when I'm filling out my lineups the way I want to, he fits super well with the build that I wind up going most with, which is one of the top three, followed by one from that second tier. Then I can kind of just live in this high 8,000, low 9,000 range. And Kokrak is one of the guys who is who really stands out to me in that range. I think that Joaquin Niemann is the other one who is super attractive below $9,000. We'll talk more about him later on. But I think that Kokrak, with the combination of the current form and the stats to back it up, is someone I feel pretty good about. And I think that the past history here, it's a thing, but it's not enough where I'm going to, you know, steadfastly avoid him. So I think that Kokrak, for me, back on the train again this week. I am very okay with him once again, and looking forward to using him. You good with Kokrak, given the stuff you discussed?
Yeah, he's on my list again this week. He kind of does enough for me in every regard where I'm not that worried about him, and that $8,600 price tag goes a long way.
Absolutely, it does, and so I think that that certainly helps swing the pendulum a bit further in his favor for me. Let's move now to Joel Damon. You talk about my boy, I'll talk about your boy, Brandon, because Damon will always pop statistically if you ignore his putting, except for some reason the past 2 weeks he's actually been a good putter, but, you know, whatever. He's actually turning the good stats into some solid finishes recently, and part of it's because the putting has been better, but I think that overall the finishes have been good for Damon. Last week he churned out a ninth place finish at the Farmers Insurance Open. That gives him now back-to-back top 25s after he was 22nd at the Sony Open. Damon made six straight cuts to close out 2018, so he has now made eight straight cuts, but none of those were top 25 finishes, so it kind of depends on what you want to look at Damon here. You could say, hey, the putting's getting better, but as we know, putting is pretty volatile. The stats outside of that, still very good. Where does Damon sit on your list, Brandon, at $9,000 entering this week?
He's like the bane of my existence. I like his ball striking stats pretty much every week, and I have for about half a year now. But, I mean, he wears a bucket hat, which is not really my brand.
That's the low. Like, I think that we talk about Bryson's hat, and we talk about guys who wear visors. I think that those are all at least three tiers above Damon.
Yeah, I mean, Bryson Tatt is, he owns it, so I'm okay with that. Visors, I mean, no offense to anybody who likes visors, they're just not my thing. But the bucket hat is just a whole different conversation. But, I mean, so his ball striking's been good, but last week he lost strokes off the tee, and especially with his approach, but gained almost seven strokes putting, which is extremely abnormal for him. At the Sony, he had about a neutral putter, slightly positive, but, you know, gained strokes with his ball striking. So, I mean, last week was like actually abnormal where his approach was bad and his putting was great. Yeah. But, you know, over the past 50 rounds, he's eighth in approach among this field, 20th off the tee in strokes gained. I mean, he can gain birdies, he can avoid bogeys. So, like, I certainly don't dislike Damon this week. I think I'm going to go back to him at this price. So I guess I'm just hoping that the putter is something that he remembers to pack each and every week moving forward.
Yeah, he's also 25th in scrambling, which I think makes me feel a little bit better about the fact that, like, he has been better on the greens recently, because, like, maybe even if that does regress, he can make up for it elsewhere with that approach shot, with his play off the tee, too. So I think we can be skeptical of the putting splits for Damon, or the recent putting stats for Damon, and still be in on him because his salary is so low at $9,000. Everything else in general is so good for him. So Damon, definitely a guy on my list in this $9,000 range, and I will for sure be buying into him once again this weekend. I'm not going to go like crazy on him. Like, he's not as high as on Kokrak or Niemann for me, but he'll definitely be at least in that mix. Speaking of bad putters, Joaquin Niemann. Rough. But still, I think that Damon will be one of the guys I mix in there. Let's shift now to the bookmaker info and take a look at what the odds makers are saying for this week. And again, it's all about John Rahm. He is the favorite on FanDuel Sportsbook. He clocks in at 7.5 to 1. Justin Thomas is 10-1, followed by the course horse, Hideki Matsuyama, at 12-1. Got to jump down a bit to Xander Schauffele, who is 19-1. Then you got Gary Woodland, Ricky Fowler, and Tony Finau, all sitting at 21-1. Then Phil Mickelson and Webb Simpson round up the top group at 24-1. So, Brandon, when you look at this top group, we talked about Rahm before, the way we're handling him. I want to talk about him from a cash game perspective. You're playing a cash game here. Given the odds in Rahm's favor, given the current form, given the consistency you mentioned, is he kind of the first guy you lock in for cash games?
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, the top tens are just insane from Rahm. He's done it here. I mean, his debut. I think it was when he was still an amateur. Don't quote me on that. But back in 2015, he debuted with a fifth place finish here. I mean, the 16th and 11th the past 2 years. Their super recent form is amazing. The just like past 2 years form is insane. So I don't really know how you look, even with Hideki there, at what he's done and how good he looks. I know that there's a $700 difference, but if you're just ranking them, there's kind of no way that Rahm isn't the go-to cash game play.
I would agree with that. So I prefer Justin Thomas in tournaments, but I also prefer Rahm in cash games because the profile recently has just been too good for me to ignore there. What odds movement have you seen, Brandon, since things opened? They opened up a little bit later yesterday than usual, so maybe not a ton of movement, but what have you seen since that time?
Yeah, I mean, Hideki opened at 13-1. He's 12-1, so there's some positive movement there, which would suggest that people are backing him, even at fairly short odds. Tony Finau opened at 24-1 on FanDuel Sportsbook. He's now 21. Phil Mickelson moved from 29 to 24. Adam Hadwin, a pretty sizable move from 44 to 36. Chez, I alluded to, this is his home course, coming off a second last year, 55 to 46. Ryan Palmer improved from 90 to 80. Sungjae Im, pretty cheap again this week. He was 90. He is now 75. Marty Laird, 100 to 90. Sung Kang, I mean, these guys are all longer, but they've moved. Sung Kang, 240 to 190. Scott Stallings, 250 to 210. I've seen his name quite a bit as a sleeper this week. And Trey Mullinax from 250 to 190.
Let's talk about Phil here for a second. He is, as you mentioned, 24 to 1. $11,100, though, on FanDuel, which means that he is in that same pricing tier as Woodland, Xander, Ricky, Finau. That's a pretty loaded tier. Phil finished second at the Desert Classic. Does he tempt you this week, or does the strength of the field around him push you away?
I mean, I can see the case for it, but I don't really play a lot of Phil. I like Phil. I have like no problems with him. It's not like it's anything like that. But I mean, even like their more recent sample, is not necessarily great. He's been good around the green, not necessarily good on his approach. 99th there over the past 12 rounds for him. I have a lot of trouble playing Phil here. Whenever I go down this list and I want to play Rahm, I want to play Justin Thomas, Hideki, Woodland. I always want to play Xander, Fowler, and Finau. So it's really hard for me to want to make the case for Phil when I have so many other options I prefer.
Yeah, I think in this range, you're allowed to be picky. And like with Phil, the stats are bad enough where if I'm being picky even a tiny bit, I'm going to cross him off. So to me, I think it's pretty easy just to, exclude him from that tier, look at the other guys there and focus on them instead. So even though the movement has been in favor of Phil, not necessarily a guy on our list for this week. What cheap golfers, Brandon, have low salaries, but odds that stand out to you?
Okay. So, I mean, with like 8 to 10 really solid golfers here, there aren't too many cheap guys with great odds, but Cameron Champ is 41-1. On FanDuel Sportsbook, he's 9,400 on FanDuel. Ben On is 50-1 at 9,200. Luke List, Abraham Answer, Sungjae Im, which is a pretty gym list. It's your sort of brand right there.
Yep.
All three are either 70-1 or 75-1 and priced in the low 9,000s. But I mean, that's kind of it unless you dip below 9K. And then we have Siwoo Kim at 91 or 90-1. And then my boy and your boy, if he's still your boy, Joaquin Neiman at 100-1. He is priced at 8,900. He was priced above 10,000 just a couple weeks ago.
You know, like, and like he was 95 last week and he was on like 3.6% of rosters. So I'm going back to Joaquin Neiman. Don't you worry about that. The problem is I just need him to hit one putt, literally one, man, just one, like, please.
Yeah.
Putting like me, man. And that's not good. I want to talk about Cameron Champ because he was a guy we discussed last week as avoiding because we thought there was a chance he'd be popular. There's a bit of volatility in his game and he did miss a cut. Now volatility can work both ways. We saw Champ post some really good finishes back in the fall, though those were against weaker fields. We know what he can do off the tee. Are you tempted to buy back in, knowing that people who used him last week are unlikely to use him this week? Or is the approach game bad enough where you're not even tempted to buy in there?
I mean, I'm a little bit tempted, but it's really – this is a week where I am having trouble narrowing down
the
list more than I'm trying to find golfers to play. I mean, he's almost in that range. He's 9,400. Again, I mean, I'm okay with Emiliano Grillo at 98, Billy Horschel at 98. Mm-hmm. Again, Chez is okay at 10,300. But, like, I like, we talked about Ben On. There's Answer, Damon, Sungjae Im. Like, it's going to be hard for me to go back to Champ when I have legitimate concerns about his approach.
I would agree with that. I think that just again, because like there are, you named a lot of guys, there are some other guys in that range who I like too. So
Kyle Stanley.
Kyle Stanley actually did kind of pop to me this week. I didn't include him in the player picks, but he's 16th in approach, 30th off the tee the past 50 rounds.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
He not great history here. I mean, he's played here five times over the past 5 years, cut 45th, 36th cut, but I can see the case for him. So again, it's just more of a, I need to narrow things down more than add to my list.
And we're not short on options in this range this week, but I think is very, very relaxing, and I will take that for sure. Before we take a look at our player picks for the Waste Management Phoenix Open, taking a look at the weather, there is a really good chance of rain during the morning on Sunday, so that could slow things down a bit, maybe allow our boy Joaquin Neiman to accidentally sink a putt, but it looks relatively dry up until that point with little wind. So I don't think we can really go in waves from a weather perspective. There's nothing really impactful from a weather perspective until Sunday. So probably not something we can wait heavily for this week. So with that said, Brandon, let's move into our player picks for this weekend. Who are you targeting in DFS for the Waste Management Open?
Okay. So I know I said that I would be, you know, pretty underweight or consider a full fade on Hideki in tournaments, but I don't know how you don't recommend him here at 11,800 from a cash game and just from a common sense, like this dude is in for a good week. I'm willing to miss out on great plays because I try to outsmart everything and find plays at low ownership. So, you know, I'm separating that and just saying that Hideki is an objectively great play this week. He is, again, like the guy at this course with a fourth, second win over his past four. Withdrew with his injury last year. It's sort of like kicked off his like downward spiral last spring. But, I mean, he looks like he's past that injury certainly by now. He's bounced back with a third last week at the Farmers. And the recent stats are good. Second in the field in stroke gained approach over his past 50 rounds. He ranks 7th in birdies gained, 10th in greens of regulation gained in that span. So as much as I think I personally might be underweight, I think Hideki is a great play.
Do you think you'll have more Rahm or more Hideki this weekend?
I'll probably force myself to pay up for Rahm because I think most people will just say, I'll take the savings with Hideki.
I agree. I will have more Rahm than Hideki this week. I want to get exposure to both, but more limited, especially in comparison to a guy like Justin Thomas, because he's my first high-priced guy to mention because, again, Rahm's going to get attention because of his current form. Hideki will get attention because of his course history and partially because of his current form too, but Justin Thomas is still Justin Thomas. He leads this field in strokes gained approach over the past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National. So the recent stats are still very good. He was 16th at the Sony Open, 3rd at the Tournament of Champions. So even though he hasn't been to the past two events like Rahm has, he's still been in our minds in this calendar month of January. So I think that there's no rust concerns for Thomas. He finished 17th here last year, did miss a cut each of the two previous years. So maybe that'll put another cap on his ownership. I think that Thomas is going to be my favorite guy for tournaments. Brandon, you mentioned probably the same thing for you, at least in this higher range. Would you consider going Rahm and Thomas in cash games, or are you dropping down from Rahm for that second spot? Because I think that I probably would skip over Thomas in cash games.
In cash games, I'd probably, if I'm spending up on two of the three, I would probably go Rahm and Hideki,
sure.
Which I think makes Thomas the correct tournament play. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of, I mean, I'm going to try to be actively underweight on Rahm and Hideki in tournaments just from a game theory standpoint. But I mean, the case to be made for them is so, so easy.
Absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of reason to use them, but from a game theory perspective, there are also a lot of reasons not to. And I tend to lead towards the not for tournaments, but I think they're both good plays for cash. Let's dip down a little bit in pricing to that second tier and look at our second high price guys. Brandon, who is standing out to you in that second tier?
I was going to go with Gary Woodland, but I think we talked about him. And frankly, you know, from Tony Finau up, other than Phil, I'm fine with every golfer. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you more of a tournament spin here on Xander. Over the past 50 rounds, he is 41st in approach, 9th in birdies gained, 17th in bogeys avoided. So he can get it done with that ball striking. He's 22nd in that span. And strokes gained on par fours. The problem spot is that he's 83rd in greens and regulation gained and 81st and strokes gained off the tee in that split. So that's kind of why he got bumped out of my, you know, sort of primary plays here. But from a tournament standpoint, like if you look at the super recent sample, and we know that Xander can really get things done in tough fields, he ranks 21st in strokes gained ball striking over his past 12 rounds, including 32nd off the tee and 25th in approach. He's 20th around the green, 4th in putting. So I know that we generally don't like to target guys who are putting super hot, but I mean, he's 14th in strokes gained tee to green. He only played here once with the 17th last year. So, I mean, I think that he can do it at lower ownership. He's sort of getting treated as a bit of an afterthought. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, I love Gary Woodland, last year's winner. I would prefer him straight up, but sure. I think that, you know, all things considered, Xander still was in play for tournaments.
Yeah, last week I thought he'd go a little bit under-owned because the course history was so bad for him, but then he wound up being, I think, the second most popular golfer on FanDuel, which was surprising but justified, I think. So this week, though, when you've got Fowler, Woodland, Finau, who was the most popular last week, like, they're going to be names to draw away from Xander. So from a tournament perspective, I think that he always makes sense, yeah. Especially here.
The thing for Xander last week was he was 10,000. Right. He was second in ownership last week to Tony Finau. Finau was 34%. Xander 31%. And I just have to think that he goes sort of overlooked when he's sandwiched between Finau, Ricky, and Woodland, right?
I would assume the same. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk here about Tony Finau, my second high price guy, because for me, again, it's hard to pick between Finau and Woodland for this this number two spot in this or for the number one spot in the second tier. But I think that Finau's really attracted me. Woodland is a past winner here. He's on this really solid hot streak. I think that will push people towards Woodland. But Finau, from a course history perspective, has missed the cut here 3 straight years. He shot under par just once in that time, but he's golfing so much better now than he was then that the course history doesn't scare me. I'm kind of hoping it makes him not be as popular as he was last week. Finau last week was 13th. He ranks 9th in strokes gained off the tee. He's 24th in approach in the field over the past 50 rounds. So the stats are there. He's $10,900. What's your feel on Finau, Brandon? Is he going to be as popular again as he was last week, or will he kind of succumb to the popularity of his tier in general?
Well, he's sort of trending up in tags already on Fanshare. Not all of the sentiment is positive, so that's one thing to keep in mind. But I don't think that he's going to go as under-owned, primarily because he's the cheapest in his tier, because I don't really consider like Webb Simpson and Kuchar and
right.
Cam Smith in that tier, although I could see the case for Cam Smith this week if you look at the more recent sample like I was with Xander. But it could lead to Finau just sort of being popular if, you know, people have 10-9 and can't get to Ricky or Phil or Xander, whoever they want. So I do think that'll be popular, but I think that he's still worth it because his profile is so good overall. And I personally am not concerned about the past history here. Mm-hmm. And I would have to think that not a whole lot of people weigh that in too heavily. I could be wrong on that, but
I really hope they do. That's my one hope.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my really only hope for trying to get Tony Finau to not be aggressively popular, but hey.
So he's your second in this tier of five behind Woodland still?
Yeah. I think that it's those two definitively. I would lean Woodland over Finau, I guess, if you force me to choose.
Yeah.
But they're both really, really fun. Let's shift down to the mid-pricing tier, Brandon, and take a look at who is standing out there to you. Again, you kind of said you're probably not going to be here a lot because you want to go start with the Scrubs. But if you do decide to dabble in this range, who stands out to you?
I think Chez, because I don't want to include Cam Smith at 10-7. He's a bit too pricey for this. So Chez Reavie at 10-3 is a little bit intriguing. 46-1 on FanDuel Sportsbook to win after opening at 55. I mean, there's just kind of a big drop down to me after the top 8 to 10. So I don't really think I'll be in this range much, like you said. Reavie is solid across the board. He is 27th in approach, 22nd in strokes gained on par fours, 4th in greens in regulation gained over his past 50. He had missed 3 straight cuts at this, quote unquote home course, but he bounced back with a 2nd last year. But again, to me, it's mostly a stars and scrubs week. And if I had to pick one golfer to live with, it's your first mid-price love.
And that is Billy Horschel. So let's talk about him here, because I think that he is a big part of the reason why I am very receptive to a balanced build. Like, I agree with Brandon. I don't like the 10,000 range. I think that's pretty unattractive overall. I'm not a huge fan of, like, basically anyone after Finau and down here to Billy Horschel, but Horschel's really, really fun at 9-8, and he kind of starts off a tier that I think is pretty fun, too. Horschel coming off an 8th place finish last week, which continues a hot streak that started all the way back in the summer, and has continued here. He now has a streak of 4 straight top 25s, dating back to the WGC HSBC, and Horschel, from a stats perspective, is like a god. He is 13th in strokes gained off the tee, 15th in approach, 8th in scrambling. I don't get a lot of guys who are good in all three stats I'm looking at, and Horschel just happens to be one. Ben On is the other guy who we'll talk about in a second. So Horschel, to me, I think allows me to feel better about not going stars and scrubsy. And I think that I can afford him pretty easily this week. So Billy Horschel, to me, a guy I definitely want to make sure I actively get. And Brandon, you said you're in on him too, for sure, right?
Yeah, I mean, 4 straight cuts here. His stats have been like not just good, but like elite for quite a while now. The one red flag I would have is the birdie ability. He's 47th there over his past 50 rounds, but first in greens and regulation gained in that span, so that doesn't super add up. And he's 2nd in bogey avoidance, so he's been kind of like a par heavy guy, which is not really what you want for fantasy.
Right.
So that's like the one red flag I'd have.
And it helps that he's 9-8 to kind of alleviate that concern. Like, you don't need as many birdies from him as you would need from someone in the 11,000 range, but you kind of need him for everyone. So that definitely does matter. But I think that for me, I'm not super enamored with the golfers below 8-6. And I think that that's why I gravitate towards more of a balanced build, and Horschel fits in pretty well with that. So let's move down to your second mid-price guy, Brandon. Who else are you targeting in this range?
Joel Damon at 9,000. I'm just going to include him because, I mean, there are some names that I'm okay with. Like, I could see, again, Cam Champ is justifiable. Luke List, somewhat. justifiable. Ben on, I like answer Kyle Stanley, but I mean, Damon really just looks solid enough to include in the mid range, even at 9,000. Of course, he finished ninth last week, 22nd at the Sony. His last missed cut came at the Dell Technologies Championship, so that gives him 8 straight made cuts. He is 8th in approach, 20th in strokes gained off the tee, 12th on par fours over his past 50 rounds. So he's someone I'm just targeting in this low $9,000 range. Sungjae Im also in play for me, the same price. He's got better win odds, so I think Damon is someone I'm going back to this week.
I agree on both those guys. You mentioned Sungjae Im. He's 20th off the tee, 57th in approach over the past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National. And as we know, because we've been talking about him in the current form section for a while now, the current form is also very good. Good finishes recently. So I agree. If you had to pick between Damon and Im, who do you side with?
The safer bet is definitely Sungjae Im.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't make that much known. I probably should have talked about him. But yeah, I think that both are in play, absolutely. And that's why I'm probably just going to try to narrow it down to like four-ish studs and then cycle in all these value guys who I like enough, but I'm not necessarily 100% sold on.
I think I could be okay with that strategy as well. So let's talk about Byung-Hun Ahm. We went through the impressive finishes the past 2 years in Scottsdale earlier, but there are a lot of other things that draw me to Ben on this week. The first is the stats. Kind of like Horschel has mentioned, he's good in all three stats I'm looking at. He's 28th in strokes gained off the tee over the past 50 rounds, 17th in approach, 12th in scrambling. So he's super well-rounded, and that, to me, makes a pretty safe pick. And he's also been, you know, golfing internationally. So there's some travel concern, but no layoff concerns. As Brandon mentioned, he was 12th in the Dubai Desert Classic last week. So golfing really well, again, against a tough field. He is $9,200. He will be a part of my core for this week. I love what he does, everything about it. I think, as Brandon mentioned, the one concern is that he may be a bit too popular because he is so cheap. But if that winds up being the case, I can just pop to Abraham Answer. I think that that's where I'd wind up going as an alternative to On. If you had to pivot off of On, Brandon, would it be Answer for you as well? Are you okay with him?
Yeah, I'm okay with Answer for sure. I mean, he can score on the par fours. He can gain strokes off the tee. Of course, not necessarily the best approach play. And again, one of these guys who doesn't necessarily make a ton of birdies. He's 59th in birdies gained over his past 50, 7th in bogey avoidance. So setting up more as like a safe play than a super high upside guy.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense. So let's move down here to the lower pricing range. Brandon, you're talking about a guy I really considered talking about, but I have talked about him like 3 straight weeks. So I figure I'll let you have Harold Varner the third for this week. What do you see with him at 8-9?
Yeah, I like Varner, obviously. But he missed the cut here in 2016, followed that up with a 68th and a 38th the past 2 years. He's actually lost strokes with his approach shots in all three iterations. He grades out 54th over his past 50 rounds there, but he's also 25th in strokes gained off the tee, top 20 in strokes gained on par fours, greens in regulation gained, birdies gained, and bogeys avoided. So, of course, not a can't miss play, but a great overall stat profile with some course knowledge. Again, not the best finishes here. Did miss the cut last week, but I think at this price, he's certainly in play.
Very aware that he missed the cut last week. Very aware. Yeah. But I think that there are a lot of guys this week who missed the cut last week who are good bounce back picks. We talked about Champ before. I'm okay with him. I think that Answer fits in the same mold. Alex Noren, I would be inclined to potentially go with this week after a missed cut. So there are a lot of guys who missed the cut last week that I'm willing to buy in on the bounce back. And Varner to me is one of them. So I'm very okay with that. Not a missed cut last week for Joaquin Niemann, but it was very close as he finished in the 60s. And I kind of feel like it's got to happen at some point. I hope, at least. So Joaquin Niemann, my first low price guy, he has lost an average of 3.5 strokes putting over the past 5 tournaments, according to Fantasy National. That's putrid. So either Joaquin Niemann is the worst putter on the planet, which is possible, or the guy's due for some regression. I want to bank on the latter here. He is still third in the field in strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach over the past 50 rounds. So not everything has gone awry for Niemann. The salary is down to $8,900, and nobody used him last week. So I don't think people will be in on Niemann here either. $8,900, Brandon, are you willing to keep bashing your head against the wall with me with Joaquin Niemann?
Yeah, I mean, I was on Damon for so long, and then I'm like, look, maybe he's just not that good, and I need to back off. And, of course, I missed out on some good Joel Damon weeks. I've been on Joaquin Niemann for as long as I can remember. And I think I just have to go back there. The ball striking is just so good. He's third in both off the tee and approach over the past 50 rounds. Like, at some point, it's going to click. The bogey avoidance is a bit worrisome, but he is not a cash game play by any means.
No.
He is a tournament play who could finish top 10 at 8,900.
Yep. That's where I'm at with Niemann too. So just one putt, man. That's really, I know I ask this of a lot of my favorite golfers. Like, I like a lot of terrible putters, but just one putt. Like, you always hear the one time, one putt. That's all I want, one putt. Let's move to our second low price, guys. Brandon, someone who is a little bit more cost-effective, I guess I would say, for you in your second low price spot. That is Sam Ryder, $8,200, and you're going to need some guys in this range if you want to go full on stars and scrubs this week.
Yeah, Ryder, $8,200. He is 240-1 to win on FanDuel Sportsbook. I wouldn't bet that, but Ryder making his course debut here after a 40th at the Desert Classic and a 43rd at the Farmers. His statistical profile, solid across the board. He's 17th in approach, 35th off the tee, 16th in birdies gained over the past 50 rounds. So I like him. And I mean, I'd kind of be like remiss not to point out Matthew Wolf at 7,000 stone minimum, as they say around the industry. He is fourth in the world amateur golf rankings. He won three straight collegiate events, entering the Australian Masters of the Amateurs, I think it's called. He was fourth there like 2 weeks ago. He goes to college at Oklahoma State. Certainly could be a full-on punt play at 7,000.
The Wolf makes you think of Pulp Fiction, and whenever we can think of Pulp Fiction, we're good to go. So a little Harvey Keitel action. I can live with that for sure. My second low price guy is a guy we talked about before. It's Jason Kokrak. He's kind of like Niemann, just a little bit less extreme in each area. He does well statistically in the ball striking stats, 23rd off the tee, 21st in approach. In the past 2 weeks, good finishes for Kokrak, as Brandon mentioned, with an 18th at the Desert Classic, 20th at the Farmers Insurance Open. And Kokrak knows this course. He has been here seven times before. That does, of course, include four missed cuts, but he was 31st here last year. He's been golfing well of late, so at $8,600, Kokrak is the lowest salary golfer I feel really comfortable with, I think is the best way I would phrase that. Kokrak at $8,600, maybe CT Pond, who got off to a good start last week, could tempt me. He is also $8,600. I think that he and maybe JJ Spawn are like the two guys I'm okay with. Any other lowish type? I guess Keith Mitchell, because I suppose. Why not? Guys you want to throw out there, Brandon?
Well, I just have to go back. You said that Jason Kokrak less extreme than Joaquin Niemann, but when I think Jason Kokrak, I think extreme. Like, that's the adjective that comes to mind when I look at Jason Kokrak. But
A man who just lives his life on the edges.
Yeah. So Keith Mitchell, if we want to talk bad putters, good ball strikers, Anders Albertsen at 79. He's shaping up to be my next Joaquin Niemann before Joaquin Niemann ever, even before he figures it out. I mean, Bergoon's in here this week at 78. No, I don't think I'm going there, but
don't tell me that. Just let me live in ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Trey Mullinax hype. He's 17th in strokes gained off the tee at 7,600. His odds, of course, moved up, as did Scott Stallings. He's 23rd in approach over the past 50. So kind of a lot of ways to go. And then, of course, Matthew Wolf at 7,000.
You called the Wolf, man. All right, we got to pick winners before we close up shop here. Last week went well, as mentioned for us, so let's keep the hot streak rolling, Brandon. You can pick one golfer, anybody you would like. We're going to keep John Rahm in there too, so anybody you'd like. And then we'll take one golfer who is 60 to 1 or longer to win, because I am robbing us both of Ben Hahn.
60? Oh, boy. I was looking at, like, maybe he'll say, like, 50, but...
No, I would have picked Ben Hahn, and I think you may have picked him, too. So we're cutting it at 60.
All right. How about you go... You pick first.
Justin Thomas.
Okay, that's who I had, and if you're going to give me John Rahm, I didn't want to weasel my way with John Rahm, but I'll take John Rahm.
You can be wrong. It's fine. I'm going to go with Justin Thomas and get the win here. All right, 60 to 1 or longer to win. I think there are some options here.
Yeah. There's Sungjae Im, there's Joaquin Niemann, your boy Kokrak. Answer, I'll go 60 to 1 or longer. I'll go Sungjae Im.
Ah. All right, so I got yours at the top end. You got mine at the bottom end. So yeah. I'll go – actually, I'm going to go answer. That's fine. I've talked about liking on the bounce back, and I think that given the profile, there is enough there where I could see him posting a really good finish. So I'm going to go answer on the bounce back. I would have gone in, but I'm going to go answer. So I got JT and answer, and you have Rahm and Sungjae Im. Interesting little format this week. I like it. You got Rahm back-to-back weeks, too.
Yeah, I do not feel bad about it, even a little bit. Again, I was going to take Justin Thomas, but I was like, if I take JT, you're going to probably take Rahm. So I use my, again, game theory here.
I would have considered Woodland, honestly, because it's more fun.
Yeah, I almost did, too.
Yeah,
I can take someone other than John Rahm.
I left you Rahm intentionally. Like, he was on the board. I explicitly said beforehand, I could have taken him if I wanted.
That's an easy game, Jim.
That's right. Darn right, man. Nothing has ever gone wrong with our picks. So, you know, we'll see how it goes this week. But interesting field for sure. And I think that the reason I like this field, Brandon, is because you have options in each tier. Like, you're not locked into anyone in particular, not even like the value plays. I think that there are a lot of really good value plays around 9,000 or so. So I'm looking forward to building some lineups this week and seeing how things play out.
Yeah, there are a lot of options in play, even though it's kind of a smaller field. So keep in mind that a higher percentage of golfers make it through the cut if you want to adopt the Stars and Scrubs approach, which again is where I'm leaning heavily, and that's probably where I'm going to end up. So a lot of options this week, so I think it's going to be quite a fun one.
Do not forget that you can get our Super Bowl single game DFS preview by going to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. And of course, PGA podcasts every week. NASCAR podcasts just around the corner, because we got the Daytona 500 less than a month away. I am pumped for that. So make sure you subscribe, and ratings and reviews always appreciated as well. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS, as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for this week. Good luck as you fill out your lineups for the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and we'll talk to you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.